to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hey guys, before we start, I wanted to remind everybody that we can now be found on Stitcher, iTunes, and in Podbean. So you can go to your favorite app and download our show.
Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, show number 28. I'm Sam from Sam's Disney Diary, at Sam's Disney Diary on the Twitter. With me, as always, is Ed from the MazDisneyBlog.blogspot.com. Ed, how you doing?
Hey, Sam. How's it going? I'm doing great.
Absolutely great. So you have 28 episodes in a row of the Disney Nerd Podcast, the founder, the creator, and you don't talk about your blog often enough, so I thought I would.
Oh, thank you very much.
Also on the line today is Jimmy from Once Upon a Time Travel. Jimmy, the creator of the Disney Nerds group on Facebook. Jimmy, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. So the group on Facebook, right, Disney Nerds, how many users are we up to? How many people?
Last I checked, we're almost 2,500.
2,500. That is right incredible. So if you're listening to the podcast, you may have found it based on the group. Otherwise, check us out on Apple iTunes, lots of different places where you can find the Disney Nerds Podcast. Also, the show's website is thedisneynerds.com. The Facebook group is Disney Nerds. So, guys, I had a really quick news story that I thought I'd start out with today. This is from the Disney Files magazine, which is the DVC owner's quarterly magazine. And it was interesting, sort of in the back. It's their buzzworthy section and something I wanted to get your opinions on. So Walt Disney World Resort, and I'm reading from the magazine. From Walt Disney World, in revealing new details for the planned Avatar-themed land at Disney's Animal Kingdom, Disney also confirmed plans for new entertainment experiences at the park, including a nighttime spectacular through which live music, floating lanterns, water screens, and swirling animal imagery will combine on the Discovery River. Additionally, plans call for new live performances in the Discovery Island area and a new nighttime version of Kilimanjaro Safaris. No debut dates have yet been announced. So I'd previously heard about the nighttime safari and the rumors around that. But the thing that jumps out to me here is live music, floating lanterns, water screens, and swirling animal imagery on the Discovery River. What are we in for here?
So this is going to be a nighttime show on the river?
A nighttime show on the river.
I would be interested to see where you would have enough room for people to watch other than that the was, bridges.
What I was thinking is where are they going to put people?
I don't know. But to me, I'm thinking World of Color immediately. I mean, what are they thinking here?
So it would be after like a stationary location. See, when I hear the river, I think of the boats they used to have on it. So they kind of cruised around a little bit. They weren't like kind of stuck in one area. So I'm not sure what area this would be, other than maybe across from Everest. They have that whole little pond over there with the steps and that whole.
Well, they're also talking about some nighttime experiences on Discovery Island. So
I was about to say maybe over where Lion King was because they moved all that now.
Any way you look at it, this is intriguing to me. The whole Avatar thing to me is, yeah, okay, let's wait and see. But this seems to be outside of Avatar. But yeah. Another big expansion happening in Animal Kingdom, and I'm kind of excited about it.
Yeah, I am too.
Did they say any type of time frame or?
None. Mm-hmm. No debut dates or details have yet been announced.
Right.
But it was just one paragraph in the back of the magazine when you read it and go, wow, wait a minute, that sounds pretty interesting.
Very cool.
This is actually the first I've heard of the nighttime safari.
So they're trying, right, to Animal Kingdom is not the half-day park. You're going to want to stay. They have a lot of shows planned, nighttime entertainment, the live music. You know, there's a picture of some concept art where they have a band playing and lots of fire, and it could get really – we've heard for years no fireworks there, right, because of the animals.
Sure.
But you could do something right. Water with lights and screens that don't necessarily need fireworks.
Very cool.
So I thought that was interesting. I wanted to see if you guys had heard about it or what your thoughts were. My thoughts are, tell me more.
I'm excited.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Anything they could do to make something a little bit more enhanced, awesome. I still don't see why they can't do anything with the tree at night, the tree of life. You could see that from all different sides of the park, and you'd think you'd be able to light that up.
360-degree show, like, around the tree?
Right, right.
Yeah, I'm with you. You can't quite do the wrapping projectors, but...
I would kind of question that even, because You see the dimensions of Cinderella's castle, and there's a lot of, you know, different shapes and crevices and such like that, and they pretty much cover that very well. I wouldn't be surprised if you could do something similar to the tree itself. But no, I'm looking for something more just like lights and symbolism and stuff like that. I think they can get away with a really cool show that way.
You did something 360 degrees around the tree. I mean, there'd be so many viewing opportunities, you wouldn't be congregated in one area.
True, but you'll have some really bad spots, and you know, people kind of trucking to get to a good spot.
Yeah, well, that happens at World Showcase every night.
Sure. Which way is the smoke blowing?
Yeah, which way is the wind going? And where's the tree? Right. Let's go the other way. So, hey, I think we got a whole show on Avatar Land or the changes in Animal Kingdom. We talk about Disney Springs and all that construction, but there's tons of construction inside Animal Kingdom and lots of walls up.
Well, I think with Jimmy going down in a week or two, that might be one of the things we task him to do, is check out Animal Kingdom a little closer.
Perfect.
I'm up for the task.
Very cool.
All right. That said, I think we need to shift gears here and round up Disney Nerds March Madness.
Yeah, very good. Let's finish this up.
So back to the Disney Nerds March Madness. In the last episode, we broke it down to our final game. What we wanted to do today were a couple of things. Number one, come up with our winner of the first Disney Nerds March Madness. And then also look at some of our original Final Fours and how close they are, how far away they are from what we ended up with. So our final game, if you remember from last time, pits the Haunted Mansion versus Pirates of the Caribbean. So if you look at the Sweet 16 and what we came down to, you know, it's so difficult to come up with some of the winners. Remember, this is your decision based on you alone being in a park. There's no wait. You're walking onto a ride. You are then able to – the pre-show, the post-show, everything's included. Which ride would you rather go on if you're in the Magic Kingdom or in Walt Disney World? Is it the Haunted Mansion or is it Pirates of the Caribbean? So, Jimmy, let's start with you. What did you have for the winner here?
So, for me, it'd definitely be the Haunted Mansion over Pirates. And it's a tough call. I like both of them. They're both classic Disney attractions. But for me, it'd be the Haunted Mansion.
One vote, Haunted Mansion. Ed.
Okay. Before I give you what my vote is, Tom wanted to say that he wanted to be here tonight, but he couldn't. And he sent us his vote, though. So Tom voted for the Haunted Mansion also. So we have two votes for the Haunted Mansion now. And he gave pretty much the same reasons that we've been hearing as far as the classic ride and one of the ones that he really, really likes. Okay, so for my pick, this is one of the tough ones. We have two rides with a lot of Disney Imagineers involved that we kind of read about all the time, and we really value their work. Two rides that have really good songs in either ride, theme songs. Two incredible dark rides in that they invented technology to help them get through the attraction and to make it even more special. However, one of my favorite rides, and one of the rides that I actually remember going back to my first time in Magic Kingdom, looking up at that pirate's leg with the hair growing out of it that looks so realistic to me, that I can't help but do that every time. Pirates is my ride.
And there's nothing wrong with Pirates. Gotta love that. Yeah. All right, so from my vote in looking at these two, right, I will say that Pirates was in my final four. Mansion was not, but we'll get to that in a second. But if I'm in Magic Kingdom, want to do one of these two attractions, I'm pulling the whole experience together. The pre-show, the queue, the attraction itself. And if I do that, I have to give a nod to the Haunted Mansion with the new graveyard, the interactive queue outside. I think it's pulled together a lot better. I really think the queue for Pirates of the Caribbean is a switchback, as much as I hate to say it. So my vote is for Haunted Mansion, which is 3-1 at this point. And do we have a final from our listeners?
Yes, we do. But unfortunately for the Pirates team, it's not going to help. Thank you very much, everybody, for going out to the DisneyNerds.com website and voting for our final championship game of attractions. And the winner, picked by three of our hosts and you, is the Haunted Mansion.
Woohoo!
Grimkin and Ghost run out to socialize.
Yes, well, congratulations, guys. I hope you enjoy your win this year. Can't wait till we do this again next year.
It's going to be fun next year. And you know what will be great next year? How is the Mine Train going to rate here next year?
It's going to play into it at all, sure.
I can't wait.
It's going to play into it, you know that. But to what extent will it apply next year? Time will tell.
Definitely. Now, before we get too far away from this final decision, just for my own curiosity's sake, let's see how we did with our final fours. The brackets you did before we started recording, we all went down to our final game and picked our final winner. So one by one, let's kind of hear how we did. And I'll start first. My final four was actually pretty close to what we came down to. I had the Haunted Mansion, Pirates, Star Tours. The only difference I believe I had was Space Mountain. That was my other Final Four team. I think Tower of Terror went into our Final Four.
So from my Final Four was quite a bit different. The only place that I'm going to match is with Pirates of the Caribbean. I had Star Tours coming out of one of our regions, beating the Tower of Terror, primarily because it can't beat Star Wars. over in the bracket where Space Mountain is, actually a test track beating Space Mountain. I like the new test track. I like what they've done from a design your car perspective. I think it's fun. I'm still trying to get the highest score designing my own car. So it's Pirates of the Caribbean, Star Tours, and Test Track. And in my upset, making it to the Final Four, knocking out Haunted Mansion in the second round, one man's dream. Now remember, I say this based on our original assumption. This is if you are alone and picking what you want to go and ride. Now, I've been in One Man's Dream a bunch of times, but every time I'm in there, there's always a little nudge on my elbow. Come on, Dad, we have to go here. We have to go there. Let's go do this.
Very true.
And because of that, it's One Man's Dream. I really want to – I could spend the whole day in there. If they let me carry a beer in, I'd spend the whole night in there, but that's a whole other story. So I had One Man's Dream actually winning my championship beating Star Tours. That's how my
bracket. For me, it was – I was actually pretty close. My final four was Haunted Mansion, Pirates, Tower of Terror, and Finding Nemo the Musical. Down in my final, I had it at Haunted Mansion and Tower of Terror, and Tower of Terror took it for me in my own little bracket.
So the classic ride goes out the window.
Classic ride went out the window to Tower of Terror, yeah.
Nice.
It was a very tough decision, though, I have to say. It's one of those things, you know, if you ask again tomorrow... That's just the way I was feeling at the time. I was making that pick.
Sure.
It is April now, Jimmy, so, you know.
That's true.
Awesome. Everyone's got their own. And that's the beauty of March Madness Disney style is there's no winners or losers. This is absolutely incredible, and we know we'd all ride any one of these 64 attractions if it was in front of us and we had that opportunity.
In a heartbeat.
Anytime.
So all that said, I think Jimmy's got a special guest for us today. So Jimmy, take it away with your guest.
This week, we have a special guest from the website fortheloveofdisney.com, Jennifer Kaufman. Jennifer, say hello.
Hi.
We are so happy to have you.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
And Jennifer, can you just tell us a little bit about the site and what you do there?
Well, I have been a writer for a while, but what I really love to do is all things Disney. I guess I'm a Disney nerd. I listen to podcasts. I read the books. My kids and I talk about it. We watch YouTube videos. My husband and I traveled there before kids. So it's really been the thing that, you know, it's definitely our happy place. And I just thought to kind of combine the two loves as sort of a hobby. And it's very new. We kind of just launched in the last 5 weeks. And it's going to be a place, you know, it's not going to be the place for late breaking news because there's so many fantastic sites out there already for that. But it's going to have, you know, kind of our opinions and our tips and tricks about going to Disney destinations all over the world. And, well, hopefully all over the world. We haven't made it any farther than Florida and California just yet. But then in addition to that, kind of what we do as a family that gets us that name among all of our friends, like, oh, that Disney family, because it's definitely how we're known. And, you know, it's pretty much understood that we're going to have Disney-themed parties and Disney-themed food for no reason. And so it's kind of just that place to sort of gather that and talk to like-minded people that don't think that's completely crazy.
Fantastic. Well, you're definitely in company here with the three of us that, you know, we don't think it's crazy at all.
Oh, no.
It's normal, fantastic. Isn't it?
I think so. Oh, yeah.
As you were talking, I was checking things off my list. Disney family, food, Disney themed, parties, Disney themed, check, check, check.
Right.
Well, great. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Real quick question. I apologize for not asking you beforehand, but if you could remember, what was your first Disney memory?
Oh, goodness. Actually, probably I vaguely remember going when I was younger, but the first one that really sticks out, and honestly, the whole trip wasn't, by far, it definitely wasn't the best trip I've ever been on, but I went in high school with a performing choir group, and it was really crowded and rained a lot, and we were all just, you know, high schoolers and probably thought we were too cool for the dark rides in Fantasyland. But what ended up happening is I went off with a few people, and none of us were really, you know, experts by any means. Maybe a couple of us had been, but not much. And we ended up sort of stumbling upon some of those great Disney details, the funny signs here or there, just the things that we all know and love now, the things in the queues. And I just remember being kind of blown away at how little we did while we were there for those few days and how nice it was to be there, even though we didn't really like check off anything big. So I think that was kind of a turning point for me to kind of want to go back and see what more there was there.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. And that truly is the way we want to go back. You never know what you missed the last time you were there.
Exactly.
Excellent.
I'm looking at the blog right here real quickly, and I see from a technology perspective, you know, it's got to be technology, a recipe for a Dole Whip. What are you doing here? What do you have here? Tell me a little bit about
it. Oh, yeah. Well, I have to admit that it is not dairy-free. It's super, super high in fat and cream and delicious, but...
Oh, it sounds great. It's perfect.
Yeah, yeah, but unless you're trying to avoid dairy products, then you got to look for the real thing. But to me, we found a couple different recipes, and some have a closer consistency. So I think I mentioned this on the blog. It's not a dead ringer. It works for us because it reminds us of kind of especially that pineapple and vanilla swirl, which is my husband's favorite. I tend to go straight for the pineapple, but it's very good. And my kids love it because we make it in this, you know, loud, obnoxious Mickey Mouse themed ice cream maker, which is an option, but definitely I think makes it taste better.
Yeah, that's a requirement.
Of course, yeah. however, I did find out, and not to negate my own blog, because it's a delicious recipe, whether, you know, it's exact or not. Somebody just told me that if you have a Menchie's frozen yogurt nearby, they have actual Dole brand pineapple soft serve. And we drove past three of them to get to a local one, and it's true. So I don't know where everyone, all of your listeners live, but Menchie's might be an option. You guys have that near you?
No, it's a new one for me. Yeah, I haven't heard of that guy.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch, right? But it's just one of those like self-serve frozen yogurt places. I think it's M-E-N-C-H-I-E-S, Menchie's. And we have them here in Cincinnati. The person that told me about it was in California. So it's certainly not regional. So for some of your listeners, it might even be easier than the recipe. But if not, then I like to think our recipe is a pretty good fix.
I'm going to give it a shot, that's for sure. Although, kind of segueing back to where we were, I don't think I can get that Mickey blender in my backpack into a park.
Oh,
I mean,
I could,
but there's a lot of things I couldn't get in.
Yeah, and it's pretty big, but it's Yeah.
Yeah.
For tonight's show, Jennifer was nice enough to join us to talk about the technology in the parks. Basically, the technology we use before we go to plan our trips, and then once we're down in the park. With everybody that has a smartphone or an iPad or whatever pad, now the time for technology has kind of matured a little bit more. So I wanted to go over some of the things that have definitely helped us on our last couple trips, and that might help you.
So what we want to do to start this segment is, first of all, talk about websites that we use kind of before we go out to the parks. What do we do to plan before we get there? So, Ed, why don't we start with you?
Okay. Well, whenever someone asks me about going to the parks, like Jen, we're the Disney family. We're the ones that go all the time. So people always ask us about how to plan. And one of the first things I say is that you need to go to the website touringplans.com and get a membership. Touringplans.com is a great website that is based on the books by Len Testa. What's that? The Unofficial Guides to Walt Disney World?
Unofficial Guides, yep.
Right. And based on a lot of statistics where they do a lot of predictions. And they can tell you based on the time of year to the day itself how crowded the parks are going to be. And based on that as a guideline, they also have a lot of touring plans that for new beginner park goers gives you a really good idea of what you're going to do and what order you should do it in. And trust me, we've done the touring plans many times and they've been pretty right on. So it's a site we trust, and that's usually the first one I recommend.
You know, from a book perspective, in contrast to the unofficial guides, which you just talked about, I had somebody recently show me one of the official guides to Disney parks. And quite honestly, the official guides, to me as a longtime park visitor, were more propaganda than anything. Mm-hmm. Meaning it was a Disney advertisement. When you list the top three ice cream places and the ice cream place, the brand new one in France, is listed and Beaches and Cream is not listed, that's obviously Disney trying to get people to go one way versus another.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, the official stuff sometimes, although it's good, you got to take it for face value. There are lots of other guides out there that work out great. And it's interesting right now to see where my Disney experience is going in the information it's providing versus, you know, a touringplans.com and the information they have from an unbiased third party perspective. You know, the crowd calendars, what they expect to happen versus Disney. It's what we talked about last week with the wait time that's listed isn't necessarily the actual wait time. So I definitely like those third-party places where you can get some information, like a Touring Plans or Tour Guide Mike or someplace like that.
Sure, absolutely. And Jennifer, coming around you, what is your go-to before you go to the parks? Or if you have a friend who is heading down for the first time, what would you recommend before they go?
Yeah, I have a couple. And of course, actually, Touring Plans always tops my list as well. And I feel like I'm in good company here, at least if, you know, with the Nerds title. I love, as Ed mentioned, they do use all these calculations and statistics. And if you're a nerd outside of just being a Disney nerd, it's really cool to see how they come up with it. And it just seems that much more trustworthy. So Touring Plans is way up there for touring. Beyond actual attraction touring, I like to eat. And Disney World has amazing food, as you guys know. I think that AllEars.net and the DisneyFoodBlog.com have some of the best. We look at AllEars for actual menus to kind of decide where we'll plan for our dining. And because they tend to have pretty up-to-date menus for every restaurant, sit-down, counter service, resorts, parks, prices, even, you know, different seasonal prices. We love that for kind of choosing where we'd like to eat, especially if we have guests coming with us, or like you said, if I'm recommending it to somebody else who isn't as familiar with the parks. And then DisneyFoodBlog.com tends to highlight those kind of lesser known snacks. They talk about everything, but that's what we like to get out of it, the lesser known snacks. Disney Food Blog even has these like hunts where you eat all the Mickey shaped food, or all, they have sort of these themed dining experiences, which are really fun too. So definitely those three are some that we recommend.
The Disney Food Blog you mentioned is a great site. They have the best of lists. They have a lot of great best of lists. So you have the best 10 sit-down restaurants.
I was going to say, I think you introduced me to that, to the DisneyFoodBlog.com. And on one of the shows, we had used it. I think for some menu. I think they actually have some recipes and stuff, huh?
They had recipes, but they had a really good description of the food and wine. They yes. they usually a couple weeks before the food and wine even starts, they attend whatever previews they offer, and they have photographs of the menus, photographs of the food. It's awesome as far as planning exactly what you're going to go to, especially if it's going to be crowded.
On that too, they have the ebooks that they have a lot of these PDF guides. We did the dining plan for so long, and then when our kids weren't free anymore, we had to kind of weigh the options and decided not to get it. Kind of didn't really know exactly what our options were beyond what we had been doing. And they have these beautiful ebooks that you can obviously take with you in the parks, which kind of we'll get to that as well. But you can read them before as well, that have pictures and have reviews. The first one I ever got was for the Food and Wine Festival, and it comes out a few weeks before the festival starts, and it breaks down absolutely everything that you're going to find there. And then I think that they come out with one every year for each of the parks, or maybe, you know, just certain snack guides or something. But those are really great resources and also kind of just fun to look at.
Absolutely.
Lots of pictures in those guides. Yep.
I really appreciate touringplans.com. I use that a lot. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the FastPass Plus and all that's going to affect the touring plans. You know, Sam, I know you've been down since all this started. How do you think that's going to affect those wait time expectations and things of that nature?
It absolutely changes it, and I don't think we're done yet as far as how it changes us, right? We're hearing rumors of what's coming next. But even today, with your three potential FastPass Pluses per park per day, it does change the touring plans. And I think those guys have already done some things to adjust them accordingly and basically say this is what you should be after based on crowd calendars, based on popular attractions, and based on what your family has to have done. Right? How old are the kids? What do they have to see? And I'd love to say that it's final, but we all know that this FastPass Plus is still being rolled out, and anything that I'd say now won't be valid in 30 days. That's as quick as it's changing.
Sure. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, when we were going into this topic, you know, the things I use as far as technology to plan my trips before I went two or three years ago were completely different than what they are now. Facebook has changed. I'm sure Facebook and Twitter and other social media has changed the way we plan our trips altogether. Just 2-3 years ago, it was all about these websites with message boards. And, you know, I still go on a couple of them. But to be honest with you, Facebook has kind of taken that over.
And to talk back a little bit about what Sam was saying as far as how, to answer your question, Jimmy, about how the touring plans guys and their research goes along with the FastPass Plus, I think we do just have to realize that it's going to take some time, not only for Disney to land on a final plan of what that's going to look like, but then for them to do all the research and get all the data that they need, because these books and these touring plans have had years and years of data. And now, you know, we haven't even had a single day that this has been officially rolled out where we're not still in beta testing. So we were down there actually relatively recently, and I had listened to a podcast where they were talking, the people from Touring Plans were talking about sort of a generalized plan at each park. And we started out going with their advice, knowing that we trust what they say. And to be perfectly honest, it really didn't work out. But it's probably because of that. There's also the idea that it's even going to take some time for crowds to start following a pattern, because everyone that goes, this is pretty much everyone's first time using My Disney Experience, or maybe second, third, but no one's an expert at it yet. So they can't even predict the crowd. So it definitely, it's still a fantastic resource, but I think we're going to see a lot of tweaking of even their plans in the future.
Sure.
Absolutely.
It proves the biggest point that being flexible is probably going to be the best trait at this point.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yep.
One other thing, I keep laughing whenever I see the commercial on TV, but the latest Disney commercial finishes up and the last line is, come enjoy our FastPass Plus, still in beta. So even the commercials on national TV admit this has a lot of changes coming. So
that's the commercial where they flipped Cinderella's castle to the other side of Main Street, right? Did you guys notice that? That drives me nuts. Photoshop.
Now I'm going to notice a lot more.
No, you're looking at Casey's right in front of you down Main Street, and there's the castle where the train station should be.
Oh no, are you serious?
Yeah, it's in the commercial. They photoshopped.
I don't know if I've seen the commercial, but
You'll recognize it. Now that I say
now
it,
we'll all see it. Yeah.
Sam, what kind of site do you use, or what technology do you use to help plan your trips?
So ahead of time, it's primarily what you guys were talking about, right? It's being there as many times as I've been. What I do is a lot different than what I'll recommend others do. But I can say when I get the question these days about, hey, we're headed down, what should we do first? I am sending more people to Disney's website to get an idea and a feel for the attractions and what they want to do. Then once they figure out, okay, my son has to do Buzz Lightyear, and then we have to do Winnie the Pooh and whatever it might be, then send them to some place like Touring Plans that come up with the right order of how to do it.
Right. I'm so glad you brought that up. I wasn't going to be the only one. I'm so impressed with the Disney site. I was on there the other day to kind of prepare for tonight's show, and it's night and day over like 3 or 4 years ago.
Yes.
Yep.
It is.
Up to
and the app is great. It's very good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I totally agree. Definitely a great resource.
It changes constantly. We're still in that mode where even the website changes, you might not recognize it right away, but if you have one of the mobile devices and you've loaded the My Disney Experience app, you see how often that app is getting updated. And they're pretty major updates. They're not minor little tweaks. And that's all part of the experience, and we don't even know what it's all about yet. But I can't wait.
You know what's interesting is, if you'd asked any one of us a year ago, you know, about resources we use before we go down for a trip or what we would recommend, the Disney site probably wouldn't even come up. I mean, I wouldn't even, you know, years ago, other than booking my trip on a Disney site, as far as just using it for a resource, I wouldn't have used it at all. It was terrible.
Right.
You're right.
I agree.
Well, I even remember last year, or maybe the year prior, there was an app that was out. I think it was just called Disney Parks, and it had a picture of Tinkerbell as the logo. Like, they were pushing this app, but not, obviously nothing like this, but it was from them. And we both downloaded it, my husband and I, and it was nothing. I mean, there was maps, but they weren't GPS enabled. They were, I mean, it was like carrying around a park map at best, and that's what they had to offer. So you're right, it was absolutely useless. It might have been okay if there was nothing else available, but because there were all these great third-party apps, it just got deleted. I mean, it was a cute icon. Other than that, it was worthless.
Yeah, I totally agree. I really can't believe how much you can get out of these things nowadays, which just means Disney probably decided they had to put a lot of money and effort into it, and they did. Okay, so who has another good site that we use before the trips?
My go-to, and one of the first sites I've kind of, when I became a Disney nerd, when I was a young Disney nerd, was Intricot.com. You know, they're probably my go-to as far as news and stuff. And I used to be very active on the chat boards. Like I said, Facebook has kind of taken some of that away because Facebook so updates to your phone automatically and those conversations happen almost in real time. So, but Intercot definitely is pretty quick on the news stuff.
Glad you brought the boards up. The boards I want to throw out there are the Diz boards.
Yes.
I'm sure everybody's heard of them. Definitely. Yep. And they've probably got the biggest fan base, I would say, out of all the boards out there. And there's going to be a thread about something you want to ask about, more than likely. And their search engine's not that bad. And even if there's not, you put a question out there, you'll get an answer back. Might not be a great, nice answer, but it'll definitely be an answer.
But that's the answer I want when I'm planning.
Oh, definitely.
I don't want the hi-fi hype. Oh, yeah, you have to do this. I want to know somebody that did it and how it went.
Right, exactly. Sure. And what's cool is they're connected to WDWinfo.com, which is another good site that has a lot of great information. And like Jimmy said earlier, for schedules and different parade of fireworks shows, times, and things like that, I used to always go to WDWinfo, but in the last year and a half, the Walt Disney sites have been great.
I still do, though, like their – I'm glad you brought that up. I love their calendar view that you can – they have a great calendar view for all of the parks. Mm-hmm. And then you can click on just parades and show – or not shows, but parades and nighttime entertainment. And just at a glance, see all the parks, all the extra magic hours. So that is a great resource.
Right. That makes my folder every trip. I print that calendar out, and we go with that. Thing you always have to watch out for is in the last 5 or 6 years, Disney has been making changes to their hours in the last like couple weeks coming up to trips. So it's something we always got to remember is you got to keep checking the times and things you thought were going to happen.
Absolutely.
Which these websites definitely help you out with because they've always got their ear to the ground. They're always waiting to hear these changes when you don't have the time to do that. So that's why we rely on these guys, and they've been proven right time and time again. That's why we trust them.
I love music almost as much as I love Disney. And of course, Disney Parks music is something that many, many Disney nerds can relate to and get excited about. I have a few Disney music sources that I love to listen to when I'm planning or pretty much every day. With or without my kids, but especially while I'm planning, Sorcerer Radio, of course, is a big, has a lot of fans. It's a fantastic choice. There's lots and lots of radio stations, but one that I've loved for a couple of years that, I think I actually found out about it on one of the boards, but, I find a lot of people who don't know much about it, and probably in this community, maybe it's more popular, but it's called DCOT, DCOT.com. It has a fantastic jukebox of a bunch of different Disney parks and resort music from even parks around the world. And the thing I like about that is that you can pick and choose what you want to hear and kind of filter it a little bit. So depending on whether you want a radio station or you want something specific, those are some great options. And I can't get enough of the parks music. So
yeah, I think one of the things that I've listened to both of those, and I've also listened to Subsonic Radio. DCOT is almost like you can pick what you want to listen to right then and there, and it'll play it. Subsonic Radio is another really good one. You could basically, what you do there is they give you, you start your day with basically so many points, and you put in requests for music, and it goes into a queue. So your songs will come up, but it may just take a little while. But it's pretty neat because everybody, it's all user driven, so it's just users requesting different music. So you can see what stuff's coming up and put what you want to hear, and it'll go into the queue. So that's a good one too.
Well, cool. Got to keep that in mind.
That's really neat.
I guess one last thing I could throw out there as far as the planning goes is something relatively new. All of us know Lou Mangiello from WDW Radio and the trivia books. Well, he just came out with a new ebook called 102 Ways to Save Money Before and at Walt Disney World. And I was able to read a copy of it and put a review out there. And if you really do want to save money, this book is guaranteed to save you some money. Whether it's $50, $100, or even into the thousands. When someone asks me about planning a trip, I'm definitely going to be pointing them in the direction of this ebook from now on, too. The only thing I could say that's a negative of the book is, unfortunately, timing-wise, he might have missed out on the FastPass pluses. But it's an ebook, so I'm pretty sure you can update it pretty easy, too. Other than that, every piece of knowledge in there is golden. Something that's taken us years and years to learn, but totally worth the while.
I agree. And I loved, I also got to review a copy of the book, and I'm a big fan of Lou's. But in addition to the money saving, because a lot of us go often enough, we sort of feel like we might know these things. But I think that he added some value in, there's this bonus section on 40 free things to do and collect at Walt Disney World, which is really fun. And then even just some, you know, he's mentioning buying ponchos before you go. And then he goes into talking about rainy day activities at Disney World. So there's even things beyond just a simple bullet list of money saving tips. It's a really, really neat resource. I'm glad you brought that up.
It's down to earth, and it totally is about the things we've had to learn the hard way. That one of the books I wish I had 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when we first started going seriously with the kids, you know.
You know, I'd also throw out there for that book, some of the ways to save money beforehand apply to more than just Walt Disney World. I mean, you can apply it to Disneyland. You can apply it to any vacation destination. Mm-hmm. Just a way of focusing and saving money and having that goal in sight.
Very good. Very good. So now what we're going to do is move on to some of the technology that we use in the parks. Now, every family has at least one smartphone, if not more, and the days of the walkie-talkies in the parks are pretty much gone.
You still see them occasionally. Occasionally you see the walkie-talkie.
That is true. That is true. And you're right. They're there. But the necessity to bring your own or even think about that, that's definitely history. A lot of the times we're seeing people using more and more different apps in the parks. So I basically want to talk about some of the apps that we have on our phones the last couple times we were down in the parks.
So, you know, we talked about the touringplans.com website. So my number one app that I use in the park is probably the Lines app from Touring Plans.
Which comes free with the membership. So all the qualifications are there. Everything you need is just when you get your membership.
Absolutely. And I think the membership's like $9.95 a year or something like that. So it's not a whole lot of money. But I find that the, you know, the estimates on the wait times and things of that nature are pretty accurate. And one of the cool things about that is it's interactive with other members, so you can see them post actual wait times. If you're on one side of the park, you can go to an attraction on the other side of the park, and you can look at the estimate, but you can also look at what somebody said the wait time was just a couple minutes ago.
Yeah.
The good old, hey, they said the posted wait time's 35 minutes, but I just went through in 15. You know, that's valuable information when you're in the park.
Absolutely.
It's especially valuable if you don't know the queues, because we walked by one before and said, there's no way that's 30 minutes. It looks much shorter. And it was like 8. And the Lines app would say that somebody just went through that in 10, but they, you know, haven't gone through with their update yet. And so all of a sudden, that's wrong. Or at the beginning of the day, some of the rides, it seems like they start them out at a higher wait time. And you can definitely get those more real-time, honest feedback of what somebody actually waited.
Oh, I definitely like that. Jen mentioned, basically, was, do you remember anybody seeing the red lanyards going by? If you've been to Disney a lot, you see it often, and sometimes you're asked to help them out, where the cast member, as you're going through a certain part of the queue, gives you a red lanyard. It's got a card at the end of it. And basically what you do is you're going to carry that through line with you until you get to the cast member that loads you onto the ride. Once you give it to that cast member, he or she's going to scan it, and then they're going to determine what the wait time is in line. Well, as everybody realizes, there's a lot of time that goes by the time you get from where you were in line to where you get to the car. So a lot of times Disney wait times might be just a little off based on that method. I'm sure they have plans to improve it, but that's pretty much how it is now. So you're right. Hearing live updates to me is incredible. If I'm on one side of the park and I want to hear about the other side of Epcot, I could try to find out who's here, what did they just say, how is it, and then, you know, work my way over that way.
Now, I know that Jimmy's got a couple of those red lanyards back at his house that he forgot.
I do not. I swear to God. You know,
I was just going to say, though, I'm sure it's not that frequent, but we definitely saw on a recent trip, like, a red lanyard hanging from a tree that somebody clearly forgot to give. Yeah, well, and then they decided it wasn't, you know, best to just hand it to another cast member, but they wanted to hang it from a tree. But it was the most oddly placed thing. But obviously, there's probably stranger stories than that. People want them for souvenirs or who knows, but they don't make it where they're supposed to. And so the update is not accurate.
Right.
My kids have handed them back to me at the hotel at the end of the
yes.
night.
Yes.
Whoops.
I mean, it happens. Then the next day, you
yes,
know.
Yes, absolutely.
The wait time for Space Mountain is now 10 hours because yeah. Sam's back at his hotel.
4 days.
Right.
But Touring Plan says it's 32 minutes.
Right. Exactly.
There you go.
Right. And again, Touring Plans puts together their information with a lot of good stats and years of watching the rides. So you kind of trust it. Yeah, they get thrown a curve once a new ride comes into a park. But 9 times out of 10 with their live backup, this is a great app to have on your phone. Okay. One of the apps I used a lot, which now looking at my Disney experience, because I haven't been to Disney World since last summer, so I haven't really looked at my Disney experience in a while to see what they have on it, but I used to have a couple food apps or menu apps on my phone that were really good, pretty accurate. They show me the restaurant, the menu, the prices, and it helps you decide what you want to use it for, although my Disney experience has a pretty good menu set up right now too. But it definitely is something cool to have on your phone to let you know or give you some choices before you actually have to get inside the restaurant and read the menu. So food apps are definitely cool to have. Do you guys use any of those?
I don't.
I have not.
Oh, I tell you what, with the kids, when you're in the Magic Kingdom and you're really not near anything except for Casey's and you know they have hot dogs, where do we want to eat? Well, we got tuna fish sandwiches and we got the fish basket over here at the Columbia Harbor House, or look at the menu over at Cosmic Rays. Look at that. Oh yeah, let's go have some chicken and this and that. It's awesome because it stops the argument right there and then, and it lets the kids decide if the restaurants are close. We will hit both of them. So really cool to have.
It's definitely on my to-do list is the download one.
Yeah, and sometimes you'll see some food apps coming out for specialties. Like there was a food and wine app that went out that lists all the kiosks over in World Showcase, what they had, what the menu was, how much the food cost. They even had a food and wine beer app, so you could find out.
Oh, I'm in. I'm in.
Yeah, exactly. What beers are in each kiosk, and you have a checklist of checking them off as you're going around the world. But definitely cool things to look for, and it kind of adds to the experience of the parks. just another resource to have where it's just an app on your phone. It's not a big deal.
As far as technology, another thing that I think is really cool is just having the Facebook app on your phone. You know, it doesn't really help with the planning, but just communicating and playing little games like Where Am I in Walt Disney World right now and things like that, and just interacting with the group. So that's kind of changed the way things were, you know, done a couple of years ago.
Oh yeah, well,
people weren't doing that.
With the Touring Plans app, they have a small little board also that's on the app itself on your phone. So what you can do is you can ask a question. If you don't have internet access or you can't get to a computer, ask a question about what time does this start or where does this go, and they can usually get you an answer in a couple of minutes. Same with Facebook.
Absolutely.
So I'll give you another app besides Facebook. It's Foursquare. And not from a matter of, hey, I checked in here, I checked in there, I checked in the other place. It's a matter of knowing who else is around you when you do that. I have been able to meet up with people down there because I checked in and, hey, yeah, I'm at Magic Kingdom too, or I'm right around the corner. Let's hook up and say hi and then maybe do an attraction together. So It's another decent
one
from an app.
That's actually a good one.
Right. And just real quick, not to keep going back to Touring Plans, but the last couple of trips we've gone down, we've actually connected up with people because we posted live. We're in the parks and there are people there. And usually the meetup is Epcot fireworks, you know, drinks or something like that. It's pretty cool.
Jennifer, earlier you had mentioned the ebooks from the DisneyFoodBlog.com. Do you download those to your phone or do you carry a tablet with you?
No, I took those on the phone. The time that we used those, they definitely were just on like a reader on my phone. But we just have so much other stuff to carry that we don't take a tablet in the park usually. But certainly would be an option, especially with Wi-Fi in the parks now. So
when we were there in October, and we don't bring a tablet. To me, it's a little bit cumbersome and a little bit much to carry. But I can tell you, I was surprised by how many people had tablets and taking pictures of stuff.
Yes.
Holding like an iPad in the air, taking pictures and stuff. I'm like, golly.
You know what it is now? The new hobby is watching the fireworks or the parade through somebody else's iPad because you're so far back in the crowd.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I don't like that.
They all have it over their heads so you can see the full screen.
Can you zoom in a little bit, please?
Yeah, an iPad.
Oh, no, it's horrible. The smartphones are the same way because there's a lot of extra light. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a little out of control. You see the videos of the fireworks now down Main Street, and all it is a lot of square white boxes of people taking video.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what are you going to do? If people want to catch the moment, they have their phones, they're going to – it's the way it is. It's just a new technology step.
Now, I have watched Illuminations before and FaceTime with somebody back home at the same time.
Oh, cool.
Not on a tablet, but on a phone, right? If you're in the right spot, you can do it without anybody really knowing.
Right, and that just throws out such a cool way to use technology that, you know, it kind of blanks out a little bit of the annoyance of having them at the parks. So, nice.
Yeah, I have done that. That works out well. So that's apps on a phone. That's an easy one. So what else is in the backpack when you're walking in from a technology perspective? Because I know I'm the guy carrying the backpack.
So, Sam, we know that you've got like the 7-foot tripod in the backpack when you're walking
in the
parks.
Yeah, so if the tripod hooks onto the stroller, I don't know what I'm going to do when we're not in a stroller anymore. I might be one of the guys.
Ooh, what kind of tripod is that?
So it's a pretty good tripod. It's got a little hook on the handle, almost like you hold it like a gun and you pull the trigger and it lets it move around. But it hooks onto a stroller very nicely.
Wow. I'll have to get those details from you.
Absolutely. And I think it was Best Buy where I found it.
Nice.
But the camera, you know, the Canon D5200, which is a big professional camera, and three or four smaller cameras to get different angles of different things. My backpack's full. That's for sure. So there's way more than just a smartphone. But when I'm there with the family, there's three or four smartphones, and we're all going different directions, and it becomes a challenge at best. The biggest challenge, you know, so from a camera perspective, it's memory cards, making sure you have enough, right? Mm-hmm. Enough space, and battery. Make sure you have enough batteries. So from not just a phone perspective, but also a camera perspective. So how do I keep everybody going because you're using it all day long for all these apps we just talked about.
You should see the utility strips in the hotel room when we get back at night.
So that's a great point. You need to take that utility strip to plug in because I do exactly that. I'm pulling the bed away from the wall and plugging in that power strip, and here you go. Everybody's plugging in at night.
Talking about keeping things powered, I just ordered off of Amazon. It should be here, I think, Wednesday for this trip. Is one of those little external battery packs that you can charge your cell phone for. And I tell you what, I'm so excited. I mean, I spent like $50 on one. I think you can get them as little as 20, but this one's like 10,000 milliamp. It should charge like a smartphone probably 3 or 4 times on a single charge.
So I have what's called a snow lizard. It's exactly that. Right.
Okay.
It is a, and there's tons of manufacturers and models and ways of going at it. But basically, you are carrying with you a battery that's the size of a cell phone. So if you get the right one, right, there's really big ones. There's bricks that you can carry around, or you want to get one of the smaller ones. The one that I have is about 700 milliamps, which essentially means if you break it down, I can charge my cell phone 4 times to a full charge while I'm in the park. It's got 2 connections to it. It's about the size of my cell phone, so it easily fits in my back pocket of my jeans. That thing fully charged with a couple of USB cables. It's USB to charge it, and then there are 2 outputs. I can charge my phone and an iPad or 2 phones simultaneously throughout the day.
Yeah. Nice. I can't wait to get this thing.
You have to, because when you start using all these apps, your phone is in battery save mode by noon.
Yeah, you burn it off.
So I plug it in, hit the charge button, put it in my back pocket, both the phone and the charger, and now I'm on, pick an attraction, Ellen's Energy Adventure, perfect. I'm riding that, and for 45 minutes, the thing's charging. When we're done, it's half full again. So it's perfect. Dinner, same thing.
It's invaluable. So, Sam, you said you bring your Nikon 5200 DSLR. Ed, yep. What do you bring? You bring a point and shoot. You bring a DSLR. You take pictures with your phone.
I have a Canon point and shoot, but it's pretty nice. It's a 40SX or something like that. A really cool camera that I've had, like its son and grandson. This is the grandson. I just keep keeping the same type of camera as the upgrade, so I'm very happy with it. But basically, a point and shoot.
Okay. And I'm just curious. I mean, we just bought right before Christmas, I just bought my wife a DSLR, a Canon DSLR. And I don't know. I don't know if it's a good idea to bring it in the parks or not. It is big and bulky, and we don't have a stroller. So, Jennifer, what do you use? You carry a DSLR?
Yeah, I have a Canon 6D. I used to bring a lot of lenses, but, you bring kids and you have too much stuff to carry, but
bottle instead of a lens in the bag. I get it.
Yes, but it's absolutely worth it. Get a good low light lens, and it's definitely worth carrying, and you'll get so many pictures that you never would have got with a cell phone or something. So definitely worth it. And I was going to go, if you don't mind, going back real fast, just you guys were talking about the portable device chargers, which are absolutely the way to go, so you don't have to stop at all. But I just wanted to mention that in a pinch, we also, because I'm known to either not bring mine or not have it charged, or one of our, both of our phones need it. It's not ever a bad idea to have your regular wall charger, and there are plenty of places to actually charge in the parks. Now you have to sit somewhere. So dinner or a snack or something, you gotta have to time it right. But definitely not a bad idea to just keep your regular charger in the bag with you and find some of those charging areas.
Totally agree. That's something I preach all the time. And for about a year or two at the beginning of my smartphone, I went through a little bit of a pilgrimage looking for each one of those outlets in each of the parks. Just to keep it a good one. To me, one of my favorites is Captain EO. It's got that big entranceway where you wait to get into the theater to see the pre-show of the attraction. Mm-hmm. Well, the entire wall is outlets. So you could sit there on the carpet against the wall, relax for, 10, 15 minutes, get at least a charge going on the phone. And also now, and I think we mentioned on our last show, at the Tangled bathroom in the Magic Kingdom,
yes,
they've got the first of the, I believe they call them D stations, or some type of charge station, maybe a C station, where basically
it's a stump that opens up.
Yes. It has a doorway on it that opens up that shows a bunch of plugs, a bank of plugs for you to charge your phones on. the article on the Disney blog said that this is going to be the first of many. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how they're going to be hiding these things around the parks, but still making them accessible.
Now, better than that, it's a stump with plugs, but there's seating area around there, right? So it's a restroom.
Correct.
You're able to sit down, have a, you know, have a seat, plug whatever in, and you're right there. You're between Peter Pan's Flight and
there's tables.
Haunted Mansion.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. I can't figure out why they're not selling anything in that area yet.
No,
it's got to be coming, right?
You know what? I think they realize that customers do need a break every so often. They don't want to see something you can buy. They don't want to see something you can ride. They just literally want like an oasis. And if you look at that tangled area, that kind of is that little oasis.
Yeah.
It is. And I think it's, you know, it's one of those necessary things.
Don't think if they put a Dole Whip station right there, they'd make a fortune.
They might, but you know what? I'd be bumming out because there's a line right there, and I'd have to like kind of finagle my way around that line to sit or relax or whatever in that little area. But I was thinking how I can't wait till they put the Star Wars in over by Star Tours. It'll be some type, maybe the red and white droid from the Jawa vehicle that the head pops open, you can plug in.
Nice.
You know, so they could just
like
these so many different ways. I can't wait.
So the other thing I'd add there, you can find the places and plug in. But you can also leave your device if you have a charger at guest relations and they'll plug it in for you.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. In fact, if you look behind guest relations, there's a long sort of a bar there with a whole bunch of power strips. And they will literally take your name, put a tag around your device with your name on it and plug it in for you. And you can come back in later and get it. Now, the key is you have to have your charger. They don't have chargers.
Right,
but they will do
it for
you.
Very cool. You know, when we were there for last October for Food and Wine, we talked about the Chase Lounge, which was on the third floor of the American Adventure building.
Yeah.
They had little stations up there to charge your phone, and each table had a little nest of chargers. I mean, they must have had about 10 different chargers in each one, so you didn't even need your charger. If you just walked up, I mean, if you had most
That's
phones,
nice.
it, you know, there was a charger there to fit. I mean, I think now there's really probably only two or three chargers unless you have an older phone. But, I mean, other than the two iPhone chargers and the little micro SD, which most Androids use, there's not a whole lot of, you know, they don't differentiate a whole lot. It's not like 5 years ago when there were 30 different chargers.
Oh, yeah. You have the mini USB and you've got the Apple now.
Yeah, that covers about most of them, you know?
Sure.
I don't know if you wanted to mention, I don't know how often you go here, but the Disney Cruise Line app is actually quite functional too. It doesn't do nearly as much as the My Disney Experience app, but if you are on a cruise, even if you don't pay for internet, they have kind of an intranet that you can get on just to use their app, which has the whole navigator and it has menu information and things like that. So that's kind of a helpful tool too if you're headed on a cruise.
Oh, that's great.
Very cool.
I did not know that. I want their phones to be updated to be smartphones that have that on it. And that
Amen.
Would be,
their phones need updated, period. But yes.
Right.
Yes.
That would be so cool. That's a cool thing to know. Thank you very much for that.
You know, we sort of mentioned briefly, Ed, the whole tripod thing. Right. So, yes, I take a tripod. It's a big one. You don't have to take a big one. But let me tell you, if you're trying to get video of anything or if you want to take pictures of fireworks at night, you need a tripod.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be a big one. It can be a small one. They make small ones or even a monopod so that you can hold it steady while you're taking that picture of the family in front of the castle at night. Because if there's any movement in your camera, you're going to get a blurry picture.
Oh, yeah.
And so I can't go in without a tripod.
My favorite tripod for travel in general is the GorillaPod. I've had it for a couple different cameras that I have, so you kind of have to figure out which one is best for the size of camera or video camera you have. But they're nice little tripods that are made with different joints that sort of contort to wherever you can either stick them on a trash can like a regular tripod, because that's exactly what you do at tripods, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stick them on a trash can. If you're a Disney Parks traveler, you know what I'm talking about, but
absolutely.
Professional photographers have probably just cringed. But But
no,
you can also wrap them around.
The tripods are there for that. That's why.
Yes,
that's
right?
Why garbage cans are there to put a tripod on top of it.
And
come
if,
on.
And if you got to find a park that has very clean garbage cans, this is the park.
Right.
Yes, that's true. But the GorillaPod, you can also wrap around poles or wrap. I mean, so that's kind of a nice option. It's not my favorite tripod for all photography, but it's really nice for travel.
I have a Gorilla tripod also, which is awesome. One of my favorite things to do with it also is to straighten out the legs straight up and down, put it on my camera so I can then hold it over my head, and yeah. then I've got an extra 3 foot high shot of wherever I am too. So that's always kind of a cool thing with the timer and such.
Yeah.
I strapped one of those suckers on the front of my Segway for the Segway tour over in Epcot.
Nice.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things you could do with the equipment you bring in with you.
Sam, when you're using your tripod at night, are you using I guess the technical term, I don't know what it is, but a trigger or a remote?
So the answer is for the DSLR, if you want that crystal clear picture, yes. So open right. the shutter up, you hit that remote button, and if your shutter's at maybe 2 seconds and you do it right when the firework explodes, you get all the streaks coming out of the fireworks in your picture.
Gotcha.
So it's awesome. If you get that good DSLR camera, it's worth finding a class somewhere on how to use it. Right. Watching something online or a local community college, there really are so many things you can do with it. If you're just putting it on auto and taking a picture, that's not much more than just using a point and shoot. You really want to be able to go to manual mode and know the shutter speed and know the aperture and know all the different things to get that shot, which if you get it right, they're incredible.
And honestly, Disney World might be one of the coolest places to experiment with manual photography. Whether you're good at it or just learning, there are some amazing things that are hard to capture that are kind of a fun challenge, and there are just some things that you can't capture without being in manual mode. So it's a really good place to work on that. So,
and if you just want to go with a point and shoot, remember those PhotoPass people have that professional camera and that experience. So,
and a lot of them have different modes too, that you read your manual and they might have
absolutely
modes that will help you out too.
Don't bypass the PhotoPass people. Let them go ahead and take your picture. It'll be professional. That's why they're there.
And then I think what Sam's pointing out is they'll actually take your camera too if you give it to them, and then use your camera, so you'll have the pictures on the camera and also available to download later on. So awesome. Take advantage of that. Definitely.
Yep.
So that's what we have for some of the tech that we use before we go and in the parks. We'd really like to hear what you have to say. Send us an email at thedisneynerds@yahoo.com and let us know what you take into the parks or what type of technology keeps you going while you're down in Walt Disney World. Well, thank you very much, Jennifer. It was great having you on the show this week.
Thank you.
You can go ahead and give us something about your blog again.
Sure. Yeah, it's fortheloveofdisney.com, fortheloveofdisney.com. There you can also find us on Facebook, where we have kind of more back and forth conversation. I'd love to see you there.
Okay, great. We're going to definitely check out your stories. Well, that's it for the Disney Nerds this week. Thank you very much for tuning in. For Sam, Jimmy, and Jennifer, this is Ed. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
See ya.
Bye-bye.